time, nor do we feel that it's reasonable for him to be forced to continue to do business with somebody that he may have a very great irritation for at that point in time. A refund check will solve that problem very clearly. The second item that I would like to speak to that Mr. Austin referred to is on page 3, line 13, that he would like to take out line 13 in that portion of the section and says that it has nothing to do with the consumer. We feel that it does have something to do with the consumer because we don't manufacture the parts from the dealer's point of view. We stock the parts and we try to stock the parts that are the most necessary to replace and repair those kind of damages either through car accidents or through ordinary breakdowns that occur. We feel that both of the sections that are referred to as should not be in the bill dealing with shipping charges, dealing with parts replacement are absolutely critical if we're going to have a happy consumer and we're going to have a expeditious situation. We do agree with Mr. Austin on the finance charges, but I'll speak to that in just a moment. On page 5, his last change on line 22, we would not certainly not disagree with his wanting to remove us from the item there where it says dealer or repairing agent. We don't feel that we ought to be removed. We don't feel that our reference in the previous section on the whole not on the whole harmless, but on page 4, up at the top of the page, where it says this subsection does not create a new cause of action against a dealer or repairing agent who sells or attempts to repair. We think that we've arrived at an equitable position from the legal point of view. The attorneys that have been involved at this point feel that it's fair all around. But we do not think that it would be fair under the circumstances to be removed from line 22 on page 5. I think that the balance of my comments, if I might, I'll refer just quickly to some of the remarks that the Attorney General's office made. On page 2, we have requested that the subsection D be deleted. We feel that it's a responsibility of the state to notify people of the state's laws and not of the manufacturer. The requirement is not placed on the dealers, you'll notice, and we approach it from a fairness point of view. We think that although Mrs. Seif is correct, there are some changes in here in the notification procedures that a person would like to know, but we think that the state has an equal capability and perhaps a greater responsibility to tell the public what the state law is and how they can be informed. On page 3, changing 3 to 4 in our request, you asked the question who made the final determination. I think if you'll refer to the bottom of page 2, the first sentence in subsection F says a presumption that a reasonable number of attempts have been made to conform the vehicle is established if the nonconformity has been subject to repair 3 times. We feel that the original 4 times was more of a fair situation because the presumption is made. That is one of the judging factors. You might note if you read them closely, subsections 1 and subsections 2 can very easily run concurrently, so you're not having 2 sections there that set up the presumption of a nonconformity. That was made, as was testified to yesterday, at the very last minute before it came out of the Senate committee. We had no chance to testify on it, and we agreed not to make an effort to change it on the floor in the spirit of trying to allow this bill to come to the House so that in some formation we could hopefully get a bill this year that would be viable for consumers. I might observe, Mr. Chairman, that in my conversations with a number of senators, I found that the 4 would be acceptable coming back to them in the Senate, and that would be our hope that we can limit the changes in this bill, that we may be able to avoid a conference committee and not have it get tied up in wrangling and last-minute hassles as the session winds down, so that there is a piece of legislation this year. One final remark I'd like to make on the accrued finance charges. Ms. Sipe said that going to court will get your interest back if you go to court and file under a regular lawsuit on your car. I think that that's a little bit of a presumptuous statement. I don't think the courts always allow interest charges to be refunded, nor is it a fact that interest charges will always be considered a part of the damages. She used the words commission, that the dealer gets a commission. What she's really talking about is recourse paper, and recourse paper means that the dealer is also liable for the non-payment of that contract. So he is not getting a commission. He is accepting a part of the liability for financing that car if indeed he does use recourse paper. If it is a recourse sale and he has liability for the bad debt, if the debt goes bad, he certainly is entitled to a piece of the interest when the interest is paid. And therefore, I think it takes it out of the idea that it's a profit sector that he makes. Most dealers that I know would not like to finance cars on recourse. They don't care for it. Sometimes they have to as a means of selling cars. But I think that varies from dealership to dealership. The discussion of interest really comes to a question of whether or not you're talking about the prepayment penalties dealing with discounted interest or whether you're dealing with simple interest. There are no prepayment penalties in simple interest contracts. Generally speaking, I've purchased my cars, financed them through my own bank, on a simple interest basis. I've never had a prepayment penalty when I've paid it off. If you finance a car through a discount interest basis, you may have a prepayment penalty, but that's not always the case. There aren't always prepayment penalties. There are some of us who will not enter into contracts that have prepayment penalties simply because we don't like the idea of maybe being penalized for paying off a loan earlier. But I think the most critical portion of this aspect of accrued finance charges being deleted hinges around the fact that the car sale really is a cash sale. When you buy the car from the dealer, you are paying the dealer cash. The dealer does not know where your money comes from unless you happen to finance it through him. But there are as many sales made that are not financed through the dealer in any way as there are that are. I'm interested in hearing the 80% vehicle financing through GMAC. I find that a little high, frankly, and I think that some of the banks would be a little startled that GMAC is doing that much business on General Motors cars. But I'll accept the figure under those circumstances. But that does not mean that the dealer is involved, nor does it mean that it was a part of the consideration of the sale of the car. There is never a given time that the car is not considered a cash sale item. It is not a item that I will let you use and you pay me so much a month until it's paid off and then I will give it to you. I guess what I'm simply saying is accrued finance charges, while I sympathize with the idea that a person may be out some money on it, legitimately I don't feel has any portion of the bill. Once again, it's not something that affects the dealers. It's not something that's going to cost the dealers money, but it is an item that really doesn't have a great deal to do with the sale of the car or whether or not the car is a limit. If you want to talk about whether or not to compensate the driver of the car for not getting his interest back, then that is a different mechanism of compensation, and perhaps you want to consider punitive damages or something of that nature to reimburse for pain and suffering and misery and all that sort of thing. But I don't think that's the intention of this particular bill. And as such, I would like to urge you to consider removing the accrued finance charges because of it. I've certainly talked long enough, Mr. Chairman. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Representative Whitney.
You either neglected or I failed to pick up a response to the 3 to 4 note or four times to repair the car, the statement by the Attorney General that the 30-day notice period essentially provides that fourth, or if we change it to four, provide a fifth opportunity for the manufacturer. Do you dispute that that's the case under this bill?
Well, I think that the figure, no, I'm not necessarily going to dispute that that's the case. I dispute whether or not it's reasonable or not, and I think that's for the committee to determine. The figure is an arbitrary figure in the first place. You might just as well say, the first time you come in and tell me you have a limit, I'm required to give you back your money. Or you might say, the 12th time you come in, I'm required to give you back your money. What's reasonable and what isn't reasonable? We began the bill, the bill was introduced last year, all the way through this year. It was four, right up until the very last minute before the committee voted to change it out. And the Attorney General's office never asked for it to be changed to three. It's a nice idea, as long as they've got it, they like it. And I don't blame them for it. We feel that four is reasonable. Reasonableness is going to fall where the committee determines.
Of course, you did testify that we keep it close as possible to the Senate draft.
That would be better, but at the same time. That's correct.
The first part of your sentence, you said, well, let's change to a different figure than what the Senate
has. That's correct. I would really like to, you know, we're all the same. We'd all like to have it our way. And the ideal bill is, as I've testified to, in our viewpoint, recognizing that nobody gets everything that they ask for.
Attorney General's point, I think, was well made to the extent of the balance, and particularly, I think, a great concern to me at any rate is the relationship between the dealer and the customer in Alaska, and the Alaskans involved. If we take out the interest charges, which I think is going to be a concern to the consumers, shouldn't we offer them the opportunity of the replacement vehicle? Which I assume is a much greater point for the dealers in Alaska than is the interest charge.
Mr. Winnie, I'm not sure that that isn't the reason for the presumption that the dealers will give one in order to get the other. The one doesn't have anything to do with the other. Interest charges, as it relates to the replacement of the vehicle, is not a trade-off thing as far as we can see. I mean, I can understand the idea if you're trying to hold the consumer whole on not giving him any loss of money, and you feel that the accrued finance charges causes him to lose money and that's not right, and you want to make sure that he doesn't lose any money, then I would say leave it in the bill.
If he was going to have to start over with all the loan, go out and buy a new car, start all over again, as opposed to receiving a replacement car and just being and having what he thought he had in the first place, I think there is a direct relationship and a trade-off involved. And frankly, I guess, particularly with your testimony that there's no sweat off the dealer's back in this situation with the interest, why that they are pressing that point to the extent that they appear to, when in fact I think there is a trade-off between the lack of a replacement vehicle compared to the loss of interest.
Well, again, I feel very strongly, and I think our group feels very strongly, that the interest charges are so totally aside from the concept of what we're dealing with here. I heard the remark made yesterday that, well, if a person hadn't paid the interest charges, he could have made money by investing his money someplace else. There's a presumption that somebody makes money when they invest money. Unfortunately, some of us lose money when we invest money. We don't always make money. How do you determine and how do you write in a bill like this that what percentage a man makes if he were to be able to invest it? But whether or not he's got a choice, and he looks at, well, gee, I'm going to lose some money I don't get my finance charges back and I'm going to lose some money and therefore I'll take a car that I don't like and it's not what I want. I don't think that's an answer either. And that's really the circumstances that you're setting up when you get back into providing a replacement.
Yeah, but in that situation, you're presuming that they're not going to get a car that they like.
That's correct.
I mean, the purple upholstery is probably the extreme while you're trying to be in the middle. So if there is a car that they'll accept and they can come out whole, they would probably prefer that to losing money on the interest from the original purchase.
If that were the alternative, you're probably correct. What do you do with the person who hasn't financed the car? Do you compensate him because he didn't finance it?
That's an option available to him.
Well, no, but my point is if he put out $10,000 of his own money, then the same theory holds. Well, he hasn't had the use of that $10,000 of his money. Why shouldn't he be compensated for the use of his money? That had he have borrowed over here and gone out and invested the difference, he would have had a borrowed situation, too. There's some things that just don't have anything to do with other things, and in our viewpoint, the financing of the vehicle has nothing to do with the Limited.
But again, he would have been made whole by having a vehicle of the value of what he paid that $10,000 for. I mean, he would not have any dispute, because he's getting what he paid for.
Presuming that the replacement aspect works in that direction, but if you want a bill that will provide a clean vehicle for a consumer to be satisfied with his grievance, you won't get it by offering him money or a replacement.
I'll acknowledge
he'll get bounced like a ball from one to the other.
I would acknowledge the dealers are going to get caught in the crunch of trying to come up with a vehicle that's available that matches what they thought they were going to get initially. And you know, if we were to leave that out and go purely with the refund and the consumers made whole, then I think the dealer is coming off with the best of both worlds. But to then suggest that we don't want to make that consumer whole for the money they've lost, essentially go to bat for the manufacturer on the interest factor, I seriously question whether it's in the best interest of the dealer to do it.
Well, it's not going to bat for the manufacturer. We opposed it before the manufacturers opposed it. We just don't think that the financing charges have any part of the question of a mechanical lemon aspect of a car.
Given, in my mind, the goal of this bill is to make the consumer whole. I hope that's the goal of the dealers as well.
I think the goal of the dealers in that regard is to come up with a piece of legislation that can solve a problem that exists with a car that turns out to be a lemon under argumentative circumstances, recognizing that the manufacturer always has the right, as does anyone else, to replace the car the day the man comes in and says, I don't like my car, it's a lemon. He has the right then to say, here's another car, or here's your money back. What we're trying to find is a mechanism that conveniently solves an argumentative problem. And I think we're very, very close to doing that with this bill. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess I'd respond again, we're trying to make the consumer whole. And we are, the benefit to the dealer is we're getting him out of that transaction between the consumer and the manufacturer. So there's no question the dealer is benefiting. And if we're to listen to the representative of the manufacturer, the dealers are benefiting in other respects in their relationship, their contractual relationship between the two. I mean, we've heard the manufacturer whine pretty strongly that shouldn't be involved. So there are substantially other benefits to the dealer involved in this bill.
No,
aside from just keeping the consumer whole.
Well, what I disagreed with was the manufacturer's statement that that's something between us and the dealers. We don't feel that that's the situation. We don't agree with that concept. We think that the two concepts that they referred to in that regard that have infringe on any kind of contractual liability, we don't think it does. If we did, we'd be agreeing with them and saying, yes, we think it does.
But in the case of a dispute, there's substantial benefit to the dealers in this legislation.
In what way, sir?
In settling the dispute by state law in regard to shipping charges for parts, for example.
From the standpoint of having a satisfied customer, yes. From the standpoint of profitability, I don't think that you can say there's substantial benefits to the dealer.
Well, I would agree with you to an extent.
Let me make another observation. I strongly suspect that the average dealership could live for the rest of their lives without this legislation.
Again, the dealers are in support of this legislation.
Okay. We're in support of it if we get a good bill, which we feel we're very, very close to doing.
Let's clarify that. Would the dealers be supportive of Committee substitute for Senate Bill 286, Flavor of Commerce?
As it's presently written? Not without that three being changed to four.
So they would oppose the Senate bill?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Pratt.
Testify, I remind, remind that we do have a subcommittee, and I think they might be meeting today. But anyway, we do have a subcommittee appointed, and we do have a reschedule list for next Wednesday. And again, thank you. If nothing more to come before the committee, we're adjourned.